Magazine.
Today's programs are made possible in part by 10,000 villages in downtown Champaign, celebrating their 25th year of fair trade retail in downtown Champaign. 10,000 Villages provides income to artisans in developing countries by marketing their handcrafts and telling their stories in North America.
Nervous tremors on this moment of science. Hold your hand out and try to keep it perfectly still. After a moment, it will probably begin to shake. Hold that same hand out just before you give a major presentation to your new boss, and you'll notice that those normal small tremors increase substantially. Why? The answer has to do with how nervous feelings influence a response cycle between two parts of your brain. These parts are called the basal ganglia and the cortex. In order for your brain to control the steadiness of your hand, the cortex and the basal ganglia exchange signals with each other. First, the cortex sends a signal to the basal ganglia. The basal ganglia, in turn, responds, returning a signal to the cortex. These signals are the basis of motor control. By exchanging signals, the cortex and the basal ganglia allow your hand muscles to hold their position. This cycle of signals repeats continuously the entire time your hand is extended. But, like most mysteries of the brain, this one involving motor control is not fully understood by scientists. However, scientists believe that the mental effort required to hold your hand still causes the muscles in your hand to contract a bit at regular intervals and therefore experience a tremor, even under normal circumstances. When you're nervous, the part of your brain that regulates your anxiety interferes with the response cycle between the cortex and the basal ganglia, increasing the severity of these muscle contractions and thereby altering your ability to accurately control the position of your hand. Though your hand will shake a little bit under normal conditions, it will shake a lot more when these nervous feelings influence your hand control. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. We're on the web at amomentofscience.org. I'm Don Glass.
In sports, North Carolina coach Roy Williams is predicting Duke to bring a second straight national championship to Tobacco Road. The Tar Heels won the title last season, but struggled to a 16-16 record and failed to make the NCAA tournament this year. They play Rhode Island tomorrow night in the NIT semifinals. Illinois State has advanced to this week's semifinals of the Women's National Invitation Tournament. The 28-7 Redbirds host California on Thursday. The Bulls find themselves in the thick of the playoff hunt with 9 games to play. 2 straight wins have moved them within 1/2 game of the Toronto Raptors for the 8th and final seed in the Eastern Conference. The Atlanta Hawks have kept the Indiana Pacers from winning 6 in a row for the first time since 2005, beating Indiana 94-84 yesterday. And the Chicago Blackhawks slump continues. The Columbus Blue Jackets won 4-2 in Chicago. Dave Boland and Patrick Sharp scored for the Central Division leading Blackhawks last night, who are 2-4-2 in 8 games. Also last night, the Blues beat Edmonton. The score there, 2-1. That's sports.
Vintage Vinyl is coming up on Saturday, May 8th. Start packing your used CDs, records, DVDs, tapes, and working stereo equipment now. And beginning March 31st, drop them off at any Busey Bank office in Champaign, Urbana, or Savoy. Call Dean Geiken at 217-333-6503 for more information.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation.
Imagine graduating from college right now with lots of debt but no real job prospects. That's the reality for many recent grads facing the worst job market in decades. As NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, graduating at a time like this puts many people at a disadvantage for years to come.
Shayna Berenswy gave up a job 5 years ago to get a master's in public administration at an Ivy League school, thinking that degree would help her advance. Instead, she's been looking for work since she graduated nearly 2 years ago. And that's not all.
I mean, I went to NYU on student loans, so I absolutely have debt.
When I reach Berenswy in Austin, she apologizes for tiny yelps in the background. She's babysitting a friend's 1-year-old to earn a little cash.
It's scary. I mean, I'm 33 years old. It's very scary to be in this position.
Berenzweig's education puts her in the rarefied elite among job seekers. College graduates fare much better than those without degrees. Still, she worries the degree she paid so dearly for might actually be hurting her. So sometimes she erases it from her resume.
It's almost like people are just going to assume that because I have a master's degree, either I'm asking for more money or if something better comes along, I'm going to jump ship.
In fact, she says nothing has come along, not even waitressing gigs she's applied for. And Berenzweig's starting to feel a little desperate. When her car got totaled in an accident and she had to get a new one, she tried to turn that into a networking opportunity.
In talking to the car dealer, he mentioned something about working in public service. And I mean, I'm sending my email to the car dealer, my resume to the car dealer. It's just a very surreal experience just looking for work wherever.
At a recent job fair at American University, the power dynamic is palpable. The recruiters stand confidently behind their tables as students line up 10 to 15 deep to meet them.
Hi, my name is Blair Coward. I'm a senior in the School of International Service.
Blair, nice to meet you. I'm Natalie. I'm working.
Blair Coward is a young veteran of the job fair scene.
This is my Dress for Success outfit.
On this, her 22nd birthday, she's soberly dressed in a black pantsuit and nervously clicks her pen as she jockeys for position.
Oh, I talked to him yesterday. Maybe I should go into another line.
The tables for the FBI and the Departments of Defense and Justice are by far the most popular. I overhear one student ticking off a list of federal agency booths she's visited. She loses track and refers to one as the U.S. Department of whatever, whatever. Those tables are busiest, Coward explains, because those jobs are stable. But nearly all the recruiters tell her they have only internships or senior-level jobs. Coward says she's competing against people with far more experience, even for entry-level positions. And so do you have something lined up for after graduation?
No, unfortunately, no.
You look terrified.
Yes, I am. I'm quite terrified. I'm really looking for something more permanent because after August, I'm not only unemployed, but I'm also homeless.
Coward says many of her classmates are going to graduate school rather than face that prospect. And more education does come with serious benefits. The unemployment rate for college grads is less than half that of high school grads, and some degrees are still very much in demand, such as engineering. Nevertheless, today's economy will force many grads to settle for less. John Irons is policy director for the Economic Policy Institute.
That's what we expect to see with the graduates this year, is that they'll have less opportunity, they'll have lower incomes, they'll be taking different kinds of jobs than they would be if they were graduating in the height of a boom.
Irons says those who start out at a disadvantage fight to make up lost ground for years, maybe a decade or more. The damage is also psychological. In the same way that people who lived through the Great Depression might hoard food, people affected by the Great Recession are less willing to leave jobs, even if they're underpaid or unhappy. Max Caldwell is managing principal for Towers Watson, an HR consulting firm.
There's a recession mindset and an imprint, I think, on workers who are struggling to, you know, find jobs and get their footing and find a platform to grow a career inside of a organization. I think the recession, in a way, has been fairly traumatic for people trying to make that happen.
Caldwell says that's imparting another lesson for this generation of graduates, that they will have to rely less on their employers and more on themselves to take care of their careers. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
It's 2:49, 51 degrees in Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Lyricist Ira Gershwin once said, "I never knew how good our songs were until I heard Ella Fitzgerald sing them." NPR special correspondent Susan Stamberg celebrates the Queen of Jazz.
1977, the New Orleans Jazz Festival. Ella Fitzgerald, age 60, calls a young singer to the stage. They've not met before. Here's Stevie Wonder's reaction.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. At 27, he's about to sing with a legend.
You are the apple of my eye.
Ella Fitzgerald, whose scat, spontaneous musical invention, was as dazzling as her simplest melodic statements.
Cause you'd be so easy to love.
This is the music that made Ella Fitzgerald a superstar. She'd been a band singer, then a soloist for two decades. Then, in 1956, she began recording the Great American Songbook, albums of music by Cole Porter, Rodgers and Hart, Gershwin, and was called America's First Lady of Song. Lots of singers recorded these numbers before and after Ella. Pianist Billy Taylor worked with many of them.
Wonderful singers who did beautiful things. But for me, Ella was the one that really touched my heart. She was so sincere.
Billy Taylor accompanied Ella in the 1940s.
Ella was such a great musician that any way you went, she would get there. The feeling of music that she brought. You had to swing, you had to go along with the music, go along with the words, go along with the whole idea that she was presenting. She was really so complete.
Somewhere there's music, a fame too. In 1983, the vocal group The Manhattan Transfer sang with Ella. Janice Siegel remembers their afternoon rehearsal.
We're all around the piano, and we did our little four-part harmony part, and then she scattered a couple of choruses, and she turns to us and said, "Was that all right?" And I was flabbergasted. I went, it's like God asking angels if he just created the world and turning to them and saying, "What do you think, the Grand Canyon? Could it use a little tweaking?"
She never believed that she was really Ella Fitzgerald.
Very little self-confidence, ever. From childhood, she was painfully shy. In Newport News, Virginia, her mother was a laundress. Her father left the family when Ella was three. The girl spent time with an aunt, then in foster care, a reformatory. In New York, she won singing contests, worked with bands, some hit records. This novelty tune was her first million seller.
A tisky, the tasket, a brown and yellow basket.
But her career went up and down. In the 30s and 40s, band singers were mostly blonde, sophisticated, attractive. Ella was awkward, gawky, a bit chubby. In the words of one newspaper writer, a big, light-colored gal. But could she sing?
Somewhere, someday. We'll be close together, wait and see. Oh, by the way, this time the dream's on me. You'll take my hand, and you'll look at me.
Impeccable timing, pitch perfect, band musicians said they would tune up to her voice. Ella Fitzgerald has you smiling by her second note. Endlessly inventive. Only on a record does she sing a tune the same way twice. There is no sad edge to her voice, no drama. That's fine with Janice Siegel.
I never listened to Ella for, say, emotional depth, but for sheer purity of tone, musicality, playfulness, inventiveness, and rhythmic, you know, virtuosity. To me, there's no one like Ella Fitzgerald.
Well, she sang like an instrument. The voice was the instrument. It was like a clarinet or like a trombone or like a whatever, more so than thinking of the lyrics.
Ella Fitzgerald sang How High the Moon dozens of times. This may be her most remarkable recording of the tune. It was taped at a concert in Berlin, Germany in 1960. There's something, I mean, it's probably in every performance, but particularly the Berlin one, I think, where she's on another planet by the end. She can't, you feel, she cannot stop.
like she doesn't want her life to end. It's like her life will end if she gets off that stage. And while she's on stage, she's in the dream. She's in a dream. Everything is harmonious, and people love her, and she just can go for chorus after chorus of inventiveness. It's astounding.
Even more astounding, she takes us right along with her, mopping her face with an ever-present handkerchief, holding the microphone like a cigarette, tilting her head back when she has to. Ella Fitzgerald, she died in 1996, is singing her heart out always. I'm Susan Stamberg, NPR News.
Support for WILL comes from the College Illinois 529 prepaid tuition program, the tax-advantaged plan that shields families from tuition inflation by allowing them to lock in prices now at colleges. More information can be found at 529prepaidtuition.org.
Earth and Sky.
Monday, March 29th. You'll find tonight's full moon in the sky from dusk till dawn.
What's more, two star-like objects will accompany the moon on its journey from east to west in our sky tonight. One is the golden planet Saturn, and the other is a sparkling blue-white star called Spica. All three will be low in the east at dusk, highest in the sky around midnight, and low in the west at dawn.
For the northern hemisphere, tonight is the first full moon of spring. We in this hemisphere may call it the egg moon, sprouting grass moon, or Easter moon. The Christian celebration of Easter falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon of a northern hemisphere spring. So tonight's full moon heralds the coming of Easter Sunday on April 4th.
For the southern hemisphere, this is the first full moon of autumn because tonight's full moon falls closest to the southern hemisphere's March 20th autumn equinox. This is that hemisphere's harvest moon. On average, the moon rises 50 minutes later every day. The legendary harvest moon marks a time of earlier than usual moon rises from one night to the next.
So look for the full moon tonight near the planet Saturn and the star Spica. For all of us on Earth, this first full moon after the March equinox always shines in front of the constellation Virgo, a harvest goddess of ancient myths signaling the change of seasons. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
It's 2.5 minutes before 3 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine wrapping up for this Monday afternoon here from Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3 Urbana. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana, looking ahead to tonight, clear to partly cloudy, with lows ranging from 26 in northeastern Indiana to 38 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies across the two states, highs ranging from 58 in northeastern Indiana to 68 in west central Illinois. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly clear with scattered frost forming, the low 33. Tomorrow, sunny, the high 62. Tomorrow night, clear to partly cloudy, the low 43. The outlook for Wednesday, sunny, windy, and warmer, the high 72. And for Thursday, mostly sunny, breezy, unseasonably warm, the high 75. At a minute before 3 o'clock, 51 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Coming up next, the world from PRI. Don't go away.